Welcome back to the deep dive. Today, we are opening up a file that I think a lot of us, especially if you're sitting in a C-suite somewhere right now, have mentally shoved into a drawer labeled, "Not my problem yet."
Oh, absolutely. The classic someday problem.
Right, we're talking about quantum computing. And usually, when that topic comes up, the standard executive response is basically, "Okay, that's cool. Call me in 2035 when it actually works. I'll worry about it when I'm closer to retirement."
Which is a very human reaction, honestly. Because for so long, it just felt like science fiction, like flying cars or fusion energy, always 20 years away.
But we have a stack of documents today that suggests that comfortable, distant timeline has effectively evaporated. We're looking at peer-reviewed papers from Nature, government warnings from the White House and the NSA, and specifically the really urgent alarms being sounded by Dr. Hartmut Nevin.
Yeah, and Dr. Nevin is, he's the heavy hitter here. He's the founder of Google's Quantum AI Lab and their VP of engineering. So he is not a guy who deals in sci-fi hype. He deals in hard engineering roadmaps.
And his message is incredibly blunt. He's warning that Q-Day, which is the specific day a quantum computer becomes powerful enough to break the encryption protecting basically every bank, hospital, and corporation on Earth, is arriving, and I quote, "much sooner than most realize."
Much sooner.
So our mission today is to strip away all the weird physics jargon and look at this purely as a business risk. If you are a CEO or a CISO, specifically at a mid-tier company, why is your hair on fire today instead of 10 years from now?
Well, it comes down to a convergence of five specific threats. It's not just one lucky breakthrough. It is five different things happening at the exact same time. But to really understand the sheer speed of this, we have to start with a concept that actually bears Hartmut Nevin's name, which is Nevin's Law.
Nevin's Law. Okay, I love a good tech law. We all know Moore's Law, right?
Right, the golden rule of Silicon Valley.
Computer chips get twice as fast every 18 months or so. It's reliable, it's steady, it's the reason your current iPhone is better than the one you had 3 years ago. So how is Nevin's Law different from that?
Okay, so Moore's Law is what we call a gentle ramp. It's single exponential growth, 2, 4, 8, 16. It's fast, sure, but our human brains can kind of track that progression. Hartmut Nevin argues that quantum computing isn't growing like that. He says it's growing doubly exponentially.
Doubly exponential. I mean, that sounds like a math trick.
Yeah.
Put that into real numbers for me. What does a doubly exponential curve actually look like?
Okay, visualize it this way. Regular exponential is powers of 2. 2, 4, 8. Doubly exponential is powers of 2. So the sequence starts at 4. Then it goes to 16, which is manageable so far. But the next step isn't 32, it's 256.
All right, that's a bit of a jump, but I'm still with you.
Now here's the next step. It jumps from 256 to 65,536. And the step after that, it's over 4 billion.
Whoa. Hold on a second. We went from like a crowded stadium to the population of the Earth in two steps.
Exactly. That is the true nature of doubly exponential growth. It looks like nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. And then suddenly, you are completely vertical. Nevin actually has a quote that perfectly captures this exact feeling. He said, "It looks like nothing is happening, and then whoops, suddenly you're in a different world."
Yeah, whoops is absolutely not a word I want to hear from my chief risk officer.
No, definitely not.
But why? Why does it scale that fast? Is it just because of better manufacturing techniques?
It's actually two massive forces multiplying each other. First, you have the quantum mechanics themselves. Qubits can represent exponentially more states than regular binary bits. That's the powers of two parting. But then on top of that, you have the engineering side, the exponential reduction of error rates in the actual hardware. So when you multiply an exponential capability by an exponential reduction in errors, you get this explosive vertical line.
Okay, so that's the theory, right? Nevin's Law says brace for impact, but I'm gonna play the skeptic here for a minute.
Please do.
Because for 30 years, physicists have been saying, "Hey, this is coming," but the machines never actually worked. They were too noisy. They made way too many mistakes. You couldn't run a real program on them without the whole thing just crashing.
And you're completely right. That was the barrier for decades, the noise problem. A quantum state is incredibly fragile. If a tiny heat fluctuation happens or a stray photon hits the chip, the calculation breaks.
It just falls apart.
Exactly. So for the longest time, the error rate was higher than the calculation rate. You were taking one step forward and two steps back.
Which brings us perfectly to December 2024, the Willow chip. This is the second thread in our stack of documents, and the source material from Google claims this was the turning point. But I really want to understand why. What did Willow do that the previous 30 years of chips didn't?
Willow basically proved that we can actually fix those errors faster than they happen. It's all about the fundamental difference between a physical qubit and a logical qubit.
Okay, break that down for me. Physical versus logical.
A physical qubit is the actual piece of hardware. It's the tiny superconducting loop on the silicon chip.
Mm-hmm.
And it's noisy. It makes mistakes constantly. Honestly, it's practically useless on its own.
Okay.
But a logical qubit isn't a single physical thing. It is a group of physical qubits all working together to store one single piece of reliable information.
So it's kind of like a choir.
That is a perfect analogy. If you have one singer on stage and they go off key, the song is ruined. That's your physical qubit. But if you have a choir of 50 people and one person goes off key, the other 49 voices just drown them out, the note itself stays true. The logical note is perfect even if one of the physical singers is imperfect.
Got it. So Willow is basically the choir director here.
Willow is the proof that the choir actually works at scale.
Yeah.
Google built these arrays of qubits, a 3x3 grid, then a 5x5, then a 7x7.
Okay.
In the past, whenever you added more qubits to a system, you just added more noise. The choir just got louder and much worse.
Right. More singers, more mistakes.
Exactly. But with Willow, as they scaled up the grid, the error rate of the logical qubit actually got cut in half with each step.
Oh, wow. So bigger actually meant better for the first time.
For the very first time in history, yes. They reached the break-even point and pushed right past it. Nevin literally said the whole community breathed a sigh of relief because this signaled a massive phase shift. We aren't in the physics discovery phase anymore. We don't have to wonder if the science works. We are now officially in the engineering scaling phase.
That sounds like a really subtle difference, but for a CEO, that is everything. I mean, physics discovery is just R&D money that you burn hoping for a miracle. Engineering scaling is a manufacturing timeline that you can actually put on a calendar.
Spot on. It's the difference between trying to invent the internal combustion engine in a shed and just building a bigger factory to churn out more Fords. It becomes a resource problem. It's no longer a science problem.
Okay, so the hardware is scaling up, the choir is getting huge and staying on pitch. But here is where the story took a turn that I really wasn't expecting when I read the sources. Because I thought we needed millions and millions of these perfect qubits to break encryption. I thought the goalpost was miles and miles away.
It was. But while the hardware engineers were busy building better engines, the mathematicians were figuring out how to severely shorten the road. This is what we call the algorithmic collapse.
And this focuses on Craig Gidney, right? Another top researcher at Google.
Yes. And honestly, this might be the most shocking part of this entire deep dive. Back in 2012, if you asked the world experts how many physical qubits you would need to break RSA 2048 encryption.
Which is the lock on basically your bank account, your medical records, everything.
Right, the standard lock for the internet. In 2012, they would have said you need about a billion qubits.
A billion. Which, even with Nevin's law doing its doubly exponential thing, feels decades away.
Right. But then people started heavily optimizing the math. By 2019, researchers, specifically Gidney and Ekuro, got that number down from a billion to 20 million.
Okay, 20 million is a lot less than a billion, but it's still a massive number compared to where the hardware is today.
True. But then, in May 2025, Gidney drops a new paper that just changes the math entirely. He demonstrated that by using new techniques, things like approximate residue arithmetic and yoke surface codes, you could break that encryption with under 1 million noisy qubits.
Wait, hold on. I want to make sure I heard that right. We went from needing a billion qubits down to needing less than a million in roughly 10 years.
Yes, that is a 99.9% reduction in the requirements. But even just looking at the last 6 years, it's a 95% drop.
Explain that approximate residue thing to me without making my head hurt. How do you get the exact same result with that much less work?
Think of it like cracking a bank safe. The old algorithmic way was trying every single combination perfectly, digit by digit, until the door opens. Gidney essentially found a way to just listen to the tumblers.
Ah, shortcut.
Exactly. He found a mathematical shortcut where you don't actually need to do the calculation with perfect precision at every single step. You can use good enough arithmetic for large parts of it and still arrive at the exact right answer at the end. It saves massive, massive amounts of computing power.
So let's look at the convergence here. Google's hardware roadmap says they want to build about a million physical qubits by around 2029.
And Gidney's software roadmap says you only need a million qubits to break the code.
And those two lines cross practically tomorrow.
Late 2020s. maybe 2030 at the latest, that is the perfect storm we are looking at. The hardware capacity is shooting up vertically, and the difficulty of the lock is crashing down vertically. The intersection of those two lines is Q-Day.
Now I have to play the cynic again.
Go for it.
This is all coming from Google. Nevin works for Google. Gidney works for Google. Of course they are going to say, hey, our tech is world-changing. Please give us more funding and stock options. Why should a risk officer at a mid-tier bank trust this timeline? Isn't it just more Silicon Valley hype?
That is a totally fair question. And if it were literally just Google saying this, we absolutely should be skeptical. But this brings us to the fourth and fifth threads in the source material. It's not just Google. Look at the Global Risk Institute.
The GRI. They're the ones who do the big surveys of the field, right?
Every year. And in their 2024 report, they polled global quantum experts, academics, competitors to Google, independent researchers. And they found a consensus that is tightening, not loosening. They cite a 19 to 34% probability of a cryptographically relevant quantum computer within 10 years.
A 1 in 3 chance within a decade. That's high.
It gets worse. They give it up to a 14% chance within just 5 years. Think about that from a business perspective. If you told the board of directors there was a 14% chance their flagship headquarters would burn to the ground in 5 years, they wouldn't say, let's wait and see.
No, they'd install state-of-the-art sprinklers today.
Exactly. And the government isn't waiting either.
Yeah, that was the other thing that really jumped out at me in the stack. The White House, the NSA, NIST. They are moving so aggressively right now.
They are terrified. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, released an internal report, IR 8547. It explicitly recommends deprecating RSA encryption after 2030 and disallowing it entirely after 2035.
Disallowing is a very strong word for NIST. They usually just make polite suggestions to the industry.
They are seeing the exact same data we are. They see Nevin's Law. They see the Willow Chip results. They know that national security secrets protected by RSA are effectively walking on incredibly thin ice right now. The White House even moved the migration deadline for federal agencies to, quote, as soon as practicable. They aren't doing that for fun. They are doing it because the threat is already here.
So let's bring this down to earth for the listener. Say you are the CISO of a mid-sized hospital network, or maybe a regional energy company. You are listening to this right now and thinking, okay, 2029, that's 3, maybe 4 years away. I have ransomware attacks to deal with today. I have server outages. I will budget for quantum in 2027. Why is that a fatal mistake?
Because of a concept called harvest now, decrypt later.
Yes. This is the part that makes this an immediate crisis, not a future one.
The Federal Reserve actually did an analysis on this FEDS 2025-093, and they call this specific threat present, active, and in some circumstances, unavoidable. Here is the harsh reality. Bad actors, whether that's state-sponsored hackers or organized crime syndicates, are stealing encrypted data right now, today.
But they can't read it yet, right? It's just complete gibberish to them.
Today, yes, it's gibberish. But data storage is incredibly cheap. So they are just hoarding it. They are harvesting it. And they are simply waiting for Q-Day. The very moment that computer comes online, whether that's 2029 or 2032, they retrospectively unlock everything they stole from you today.
Oh, man. So let's apply that to our hospital executive.
Right. Think about a hospital's data. Patient records, genetic information, a diagnosis of a highly stigmatized medical condition. That data does not expire. If I hack your network and steal your encrypted patient database today and I decrypt it in 5 years, that information is still incredibly sensitive. It is still damaging.
The liability is huge.
Huge. You have effectively breached your patient's privacy today. You just won't officially know it for 5 years.
Or take a pharmaceutical company, for instance.
And that's another perfect example. You are spending billions developing a new drug. The patent lasts 20 years. The chemical formula is your absolute crown jewel. If I harvest that encrypted file today and I decrypt it in 2029, I have your formula.
And they can just spin up a generic competitor.
Exactly. In a jurisdiction that doesn't respect your intellectual property laws. They have destroyed your entire business model before the drug even hits peak profitability.
It applies to infrastructure, too. Schematics for a regional power grid. Or specialized defense contracts.
Anything with a shelf life longer than 3 years is severely at risk right now. If the data needs to remain secret in 2029, it needs to be quantum safe today. Waiting for the computer to actually exist is a failed strategy because the theft is happening before the computer is even finished being built.
That honestly puts a knot in my stomach. The theft is happening before the computer is built. So let's pivot. We promised a strategic call to action at the top of the show. We aren't just here to scare people. If I am that executive listening and I want to ensure my company survives this transition, what do I actually do? And please don't just say, update your software.
No, it's way bigger than an IT ticket. It is a boardroom level challenge. Step one is a ruthless cryptographic inventory.
Because you have to actually find the RSA first.
And believe me, it is hiding everywhere. It's in your legacy servers in the basement. It's in the third-party payroll app your HR department bought back in 2015. It's deeply embedded in the VPN your remote employees use every single day. You need a complete bottom-up audit. You cannot replace a vulnerable lock if you don't even know it's on the door.
Okay, so the audit is done, but you can't realistically fix everything at once. That would completely bankrupt a mid-tier company.
Which is exactly why step two is risk prioritization. Mm. You have to triage. You look at that massive inventory and you ask one critical question. What is the shelf life of this specific data?
So if it's the cafeteria lunch menu for next week, we really don't care.
Correct. Let them harvest the lunch menu. But if it's the security layout of your research facility or your confidential merger and acquisition strategy for 2028, that goes to the absolute top of the pile. You migrate the high-value, long-life data first.
That makes sense.
And that is how you sell it to the board, by the way. You don't walk in and say, we need to upgrade our cryptography. You say, we need to ensure our most valuable trade secrets against guaranteed future theft.
That's a really key distinction, framing it as core asset protection, not just routine IT maintenance.
Exactly. Now, step three is where a lot of companies are going to fail. The supply chain. You are only as secure as your weakest vendor.
You mean your cloud providers, your SaaS tools?
All of them. You need to pick up the phone this week and call your account rep at your cloud provider, your electronic health records vendor, your payroll processor, and you ask them point blank, what is your PQC roadmap?
PQC being post-quantum cryptography?
Yes, the new NIST standards that just came out, like MLChem and MLDSA. If your vendor says, oh, we're looking into it, we'll get back to you. That is not good enough. You need to know exactly when they are deploying it. Because if your software provider isn't quantum ready, then your company isn't quantum ready.
And you might need to completely switch vendors if they drag their feet, which takes time.
And it takes money.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the final step, the budget. This transition is not going to be free.
It definitely is not.
But think of the analogy of a planned home renovation versus an emergency plumbing disaster. If you plan a renovation right now, you can bid out different contractors. You can buy materials when they go on sale. You can do it room by room over a year. It's expensive, but it's manageable.
But if a pipe bursts at 2 a.m,
you pay whatever the emergency plumber asks. If you wait until 2029, when the panic sets in across the entire corporate world, there will be a massive shortage of quantum-trained talent. Consultants will be charging $1,000 an hour. You will be panic-patching your core systems, and because you're rushing, you will make mistakes. Budgeting for this right now, steadily, is the only way to control the ultimate cost.
So just to recap the storm we are watching form here, we have Nevin's Law driving the raw speed, that doubly exponential curve. We have the Willow chip proving that the error correction engineering actually works. We have Gidney's algorithms slashing the computing difficulty level by over 95%. And we have the harvest now, decrypt later threat, which means the clock has already started ticking.
It is an overwhelmingly convincing case. The timeline has completely collapsed. Q-Day isn't a vague problem for your successor to deal with anymore. It is a problem for you today.
I want to close with a thought from the source material. Craig Gidney, the guy who broke the math wide open, said something that really stuck with me. He said, I prefer security to not be contingent on progress being slow.
That is exactly the mindset we all need.
Right.
We cannot bank our company's survival on the desperate hope that Google's engineers will suddenly fail. Because looking at the data, they aren't failing. They are accelerating.
And it really makes you wonder about the stuff we haven't even touched on today. If RSA breaks in 2029, what happens to the digital signatures on historical legal contracts? What happens to the entire blockchain ecosystem if past transactions can be retroactively forged? The ripple effects go way beyond just stolen data.
It's a complete paradigm shift for digital trust.
So to the executives listening, the whoops moment is coming. The question is, will you be the one saying whoops, or will you be the one securely watching your competitor say it?
Make sure you're the one watching.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We will catch you on the next one. Stay secure out there.